Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Support WrestleTalk.
Give us a subscribe.
Hey, everybody, I'm John Cena.
Hey, it's professional wrestler Colt Boom Boom Cabana.
Hey, I'm Double J, Jeff here.
This is Rich Swann.
Matt Riddle, the King of Rose.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Do it, bro.
Support Ollie. Support Luke. Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Home of Luke Owen. Whatever WrestleTalk is and whoever Luke Owen is. Quote the Raven. Nevermore.
WrestleTalk Rumble. Now and live.
Hello and welcome to the WrestleTalk podcast. I'm Holly Davis and I'm joined by Luke Owen.
Hello, Swaff Nation, and a hello to you, Oliver Davis, very early in the morning. Well, it's not as early for us, I suppose. How the devil are you?
I'm good. I feel productive. We've got in early today. Why did we get in early? I can't remember why.
Because we wanted to record this video before Laurie did the news.
Yeah. And I also had to get in to give a tablet to a man.
You did.
It sounds a lot more nefarious than it was. It was a computer tablet.
Yes.
So someone could install a Shopify app. Because at the Pro Wrestling Eve
Stop
show...
Pro Wrestling Eve.
Oh, my God. I don't want to say that to them.
You're totally going to say it.
I'm going to call it Pro Wrestling Eve.
Now it's in your head.
Oh, no.
And it's living in there, which means every single person that approaches you tomorrow at the show, you're going to say to them, are you enjoying Pro Wrestling Eve?
Yeah. And because I assume, because of my status in the wrestling world, a lot of people will come and pay tribute to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking the wrestlers themselves,
oh, yeah?
The owners of the promotion.
Oh, God, yeah, of course.
Yeah, and
the
fans.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's an awkward position to be put in as someone who's so revered to then put your mouth in it.
Oh, dear. Just write it on your hands, but don't get too sweaty like Homer Simpson. Was like, Murphy, nervous. You are an elf.
Yeah. Everything else rubs off apart from Pro Wrestling Eve. But yes, Eve, Riot Rolls of Wrestling. I hope that's okay, too.
When you say it to them tomorrow?
Because it's an all-women promotion.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the best idea for me to be making purring noises
just call it, just call it Eve.
Is that akin to just pinching a bottom? But that's how it's written. It's G-R-R-R-L-S.
You may as well ask like one of the crew members. Well, got a camera backstage, have you? In the old women's locker room, I bet. I bet you lads love it round here.
Yeah. God.
Yeah, don't be that guy.
I'm not going to be that. That just makes... I can't even make jokes about that. It just makes me cringe too much.
But you're going to be at Eve. You're going to be at Wrestle Queendom.
I'm going to be at Wrestle Queendom manning the merch stand. For all those people who think we don't work hard enough as it is, there was a shortfall of personnel. I'm at the show anyway because I wanted to go and they need someone to sell merch. So I'll be whoring myself out on the, wearing some Eve merch. God, I nearly did it again. I'll be taking orders. So if you're there, stop on by. Wonder how many Eve fans we've got in the Swaff Nation.
It's you, Laurie, and Pete.
Yeah, I doubt how much Laurie and Pete are going to... I fully expect Laurie to turn up drunk.
Mm-hmm.
He's going out with his brother earlier in the day.
Ooh, yeah.
They of like the
Poker Brother.
Yeah, and Laurie, his stories of meeting up with his brother in the day usually end with, oh yeah, we got really drunk and went to karaoke at 3 p.m.
Yeah. So then got more drunk and then went at 3 a.m.
Yeah. And this is a 6 p.m. show, so, you know, who knows what's going to happen.
Who knows? I sadly won't be there, because I'm at Stranger Things tomorrow.
You excited?
I'm very excited. I've got my character sorted. I'm a new romantic, which means I'm making it up.
Ooh, so what? It's just you're just going for makeup on the face,
And all the stuff.
You've got a costume as well.
Got a costume as well. Me and my wife tomorrow are going around to charity shops to see if we can pick up any last minute bits and bobs for our characters. But I've kind of got my costume all ready there. I've got like a nice sort of pillowy, blousy top for me to wear. My wife's decided on the makeup that she's doing and she's doing for me. I'm very much looking forward to it.
Sorry, I was. Sorry if I looked distracted while you were doing that, because I remembered something that you need to do.
Oh, yeah?
In relation to the Stranger Things stuff. Because I went last month. I'm cooler than Luke. Yeah. Done it already.
Just like people ask, like, what the hell are you doing? So a secret cinema here in London where they put on an immersive experience. So we're going to an immersive Stranger Things experience. And I'm really, really... I love Stranger Things, so I'm super psyched for it. This was my Christmas present and birthday present.
So one of the things, because there was some email miscommunication between you, your lady partner, and all the instructions that you need to know.
Yeah. So my wife bought the tickets, but she doesn't check her emails very often. So
you told me about this stress-inducing nightmare of an app.
So I just imagine that all of the emails that have been sent to us about the things that we need to do have just been sent to our spam folder, and we've just completely missed everything. Mm-hmm. Like suddenly realized, like, Kate, my wife messaged me going, like, have you had the email for the characters? Like, no, you bought the tickets. It's in your email. And she was like, no, I put it in your email. I was like, no, you forwarded me the tickets from your email.
Nice that there's a paper trail that you can shove in her face saying, no, you are wrong. So one of the things, I think there's quite a few things that are good practice to take to the event. Mm-hmm. It's along the lines of write a poem, and you can trade a poem in for a little extra storyline if you find it. But I'm talking about, that was a Moulin Rouge thing. It's something else you have to bring. Is it like a badge? I can't remember. You've got loads of badges.
I've got loads of badges.
But one of the things that's very easy to bring along is your knowledge of lyrics to a certain song. This is not a spoiler because it is in the emails that said you should learn the lyrics to this. Can you guess what it is?
Is it Tainted Love by Soft Cell?
Nuh-uh.
Is it Neverending Story?
Neverending Story.
The only reason I guessed.
Story. So on.
The only reason I guessed Tainted Love is because on my character profile, it told me that's my favourite song. Mm. Not the Marilyn Manson version, obviously, the Soft Cell original version.
You come dressed as the Marilyn Manson music video.
Yeah, all the characters
inexplicably
from, all the characters from Not Another Teen Movie.
Yeah. Do you know the lyrics to Neverending Story?
Neverending Story was never a big thing in my childhood.
Really?
So I need to bone up on my Neverending Story knowledge. My Neverending Story knowledge really stems from The Simpsons, when Lionel Hutz says, "Mr. Simpson, this is the biggest case of fraudulent titles since the Neverending Story."
I always thought this when I saw it as a kid. The ending is a bit weird. I always felt the ending was a bit weird. Spoilers, folks. Because the kid uses all this moral lessons and this giant, awesome dragon thing.
Dragon
that he's
dog.
Befriended. He takes all that to get his own back on the bullies. So it's like, oh no, you learned nothing.
Yeah.
You're just using
You learned nothing. Good day, sir.
This power has gone to your head and you're now bullying the bullies. Yeah, that's not that. And I think Family Guy made a joke about that as well eventually. But you should. There's a lovely. Yeah, you should know it's in Stranger Things season 3.
Yeah.
There's a sing along bit. So do you want to do a sing along at the end of the podcast a cappella?
That'd be fun.
Because we were going to do a song for every Friday show, weren't we?
Yeah.
But we forgot the first week of the new year we were going to do it.
Yeah. Maybe. We'll see how we get on with our emails, because this one first comes in from...
We should probably get into the show.
Well, I'm just going to quickly do this email. This comes in from our Lucifer, Luke Chador.
Oh, yeah.
Who says, I want to address the Randy Orton In My Veins kerfuffle. So you know the Randy Orton In My Veins kerfuffle?
It's In His Veins appears in text on his Titantron.
Yes, and someone emailed in to be like, oh no, it's a reference to merchandise that he had in 2005. And we're like, no, that's a mistake. Yeah. Like, that's just they forgot to get things changed. Or 2015, wherever it was. It's like, no, the science rules. It still never made sense. But Luke Chador says, I believe that instead of the venom in Orton's veins, because he's a viper, mm-hmm. I believe it to be a reference to Randy's dad, Cowboy Bob Orton. In my veins would refer to how wrestling is metaphorically in his blood. And of course, blood is in the veins. So I think that is a much better...
That's cool. Is Venom carried in the veins?
But no, but a lot of people think because he's the Viper, he has got Venom inside him and it's in his veins. But I think it's more like, yeah, it's in my blood.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's a third generation superstar. It's in his blood.
His faction was called Legacy.
Yeah.
Based on that fact alone.
It's still a terrible slogan, though. It's, you know. So yeah, now we can get into the main show, I suppose. We're going to be talking about, and it's speculation, folks, so don't get too angry. We're just asking the question. Is CM Punk unhappy with WWE? Here's the show.
Well, it's half CM Punk to WWE confirmed. Another half. No, he seems like he's a little bit pissed off, or WWE's pissed off.
Yeah, I think we're just going to hit this out on Front Street now. There isn't a report that CM Punk is unhappy with WWE. This is pure speculation on our part. So before you get into the clickbait discussions in the comments, we're just asking the question, because it's been quite a crazy week for Punk and WWE. There was the rumor that he was going to be part of the Royal Rumble. Well, there's been some speculation that he could be part of the Royal Rumble. In fact, actually, WrestleVotes, the very reliable WrestleVotes, they tweeted out saying, please stop asking us if Punk is going to be in the Rumble. We don't know. And I'll be honest, if he is, no one's going to know. It's going to be the best guarded secret.
WWE are a very leaky ship, but they can either hide things when no one actually really cares about it, like the Big Show return, or when it is the biggest surprise that they want to do.
Yeah.
Like Brock Lesnar's many returns, or finishes change where he actually wins at WrestleMania as opposed to losing.
Yes.
That sort of stuff. So yeah, WWE, I know it's hard to believe given the content on this channel, but they can keep big secrets when they really shut down control of stuff.
Absolutely. And it's, with CM Punk, it's been a very interesting journey for him throughout 2019. You know, there was all of the potential rumors that he might sign with AEW. And that's not just rumors that's been speculated by Meltzer or Wade Keller or Mike Johnson or Ryan Satin. No, this is Cody and the Bucks doing interviews being like, yeah, we talked to him. Yeah, we've talked to him about him coming into AEW.
They never talked to me.
Brackets. Via text message.
That is not an offer. When you tell me the time, place and date, the person I'm going to be feuding with for the next 2 years, how much money it is, and how much holiday I'll get, I don't see that as an offer. That's just some loose conversations. That's just a few bullet points knocking around.
Because that's what CM Punk would say. It was like, it wasn't really an offer, they just text me. And then Cody would be like, no, we literally met you in person. Mm. And like, you met with Tony Khan to have a chat about this.
Anyway, we've gone through this whole thing loads of times.
Loads of times.
And Triple H has said in pretty much every interview he's done, because people always ask him this question, is CM Punk coming back to WWE? He'll say a version of, never say never. That's what Vince always says.
Vince has softened.
Yeah, exactly. And he even said that this week. He said it 2 days ago in an interview about not just CM Punk, but CM Punk and AJ Lee.
Yeah, and the reason why I wanted to give this context is to, because he then went back to WWE via Fox for WWE Backstage as a special contributor. And the original gimmick of that show was supposed to be, this is an honest look at WWE. We're going to talk about the storylines. We're going to talk about fan reactions. We're going to talk about the controversies. And that's not what it's been. It has been a PR fluff piece show, where they essentially sit down and be like, God, WWE is brilliant, isn't it? Look at all the great stuff that we're doing.
Well, to go in defense of the show, they haven't exactly done that, because when Punk has appeared on the show, he has called out certain angles for just being rubbish. He seems to be the only person who's going to take that level of honesty. Paige and Booker T and everyone around him are just like, oh, well, yeah, it's good. But what's more awkward is the avoidance of actual real big news stories.
That's what I was
thinking. Saudi Arabia stuff was never covered. The Jordan Miles stuff was never covered.
Yeah. And like Ryan Satin doing an interview where he said, like, look, we will cover big stories when they happen. And I'm like, dude, like, there's been big stories and you've just flat out ignored them on the show.
They never even really covered those four releases.
No, they didn't.
Which is like WWE's thing. Anyway.
The point I was going to make was that perhaps Punk is really... I'm only speculating here. Based on the last few tweets that he has made and sort of Instagram posts of being like, maybe this wasn't the right decision.
At WWE backstage ratings hasn't really improved anything. His first appearance got, 180,000?
Yeah.
Which was way up from the sub 100,000 viewership figures they were getting. But, you know, this week's backstage just got over 100,000. It hasn't been a wild success, this show,
no.
Even with Punk's return. And he only appears sporadically. So, yeah, this ties into what he's... There's two things he's done this week.
Yeah. So one of these, I believe, was last week. I think it might have been over the Christmas period.
Over the
period.
Weekend.
Yeah, but he tweeted out, I think he put on Instagram, in fact, the original WrestleMania 30 match card that has been written about by pretty much every single person under the planet, with the exception of WWE.
Under the planet?
Yeah, under the planet.
Wow. Some mole people.
Exactly, the mole people, the lizard people running the governments. They're the ones who have been writing about it, under the sun, of course, who saying that, it was always going to be Daniel Bryan versus Sheamus, CM Punk versus Triple H, and the main event of Batista versus Randy Orton for the title. Whereas WWE's version of history was like, no. It was always supposed to be Daniel Bryan winning the title at WrestleMania 30. That's what we started at SummerSlam. And that's why we kept burying him week after week after week, to make this big underdog story mean something at WrestleMania.
It's a really actually significant lie that they've told here. Because this, by saying that WrestleMania 30 was the culmination of this years-long plan to get Daniel Bryan over, implies and probably convinces WWE... that was the right thing to do. And I think they don't think they're lying anymore about that.
It's the Bret Hart thing all over again.
They've now used that method of beating someone over and over and over again to get over other baby faces. We've seen it with Sami Zayn.
Cedric
Alexander. And it hasn't worked. But they think it worked with Daniel Bryan. But in fact, it worked in spite of that. And it was never even their plan in the first place. It was always, as CM Punk's revealed.
Yeah, so CM Punk put it on Instagram, and it has Batista versus Randy Orton for the World Heavyweight title, CM Punk versus Triple H, Undertaker versus Brock Lesnar, John Cena versus Bray Wyatt, Daniel Bryan versus Sheamus, Big Show versus Kane, which obviously was a different match in the end. That was with Kane and Road Dogg and the New Age Outlaws versus The Shield, and Roman Reigns versus Dean Ambrose for the US title. That was the original WrestleMania 30 lineup.
Well, that's interesting because, remember, WrestleMania 30 was pre-Shield split by a few months.
A few months,
because it was the Evolution feud that Batista and Orton would go into with the Shield afterwards.
Which we've covered on our Patreon podcast.
So that means that Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose would have had to have either had a friendly rivalry over that United States title, which could have sowed the seeds for the Shield breakup plans. Or maybe they were going to break up the Shield pre-WrestleMania. There's no appearance of Seth Rollins on this card at all. But yeah, that match became a squash match on the Shield's behalf.
It was a great squash match as well. I mean, not for Billy Gunn, like.
At the Shield just squashing Kane and the New Age Outlaws.
Yeah. So I thought that was very interesting that, apropos of nothing, CM Punk put that out on Instagram to basically say, like, don't believe WWE's lies, like Memento. Don't believe their lies. And then this week, after WWE Backstage, The Miz posted a video. Well, WWE on Fox posted a video, and it's The Miz after the show's finished being like, that was the best show we've done so far, talking to Renee Young and Paige here. And he says, like, I think it was the best show. And Renee's like, I don't know, I thought the one with Ember Moon was pretty good. And Miz just goes, oh, sorry, I didn't change the culture. My bad.
Obviously a joke.
100% a joke. A bit of a friendly jab to CM Punk, who, when he returned to WWE, said, when they think they've got the answers, I changed the culture.
Yeah. He's like, Miz is a heel right now, remember? He turned heel last Friday with John Morrison on SmackDown. This is him. He knows that this wasn't the best episode ever because CM Punk, he's making a joke about that. It's heel heat. It's like when he calls himself, I'm a Hollywood megastar. We all know he isn't. Yeah. He knows he isn't. He's saying it to make us annoyed.
It was so clearly a joke. CM Punk, on the other hand, did not think this was a joke.
I was baffled by this reaction. CM Punk seems to be quite a measured man on social media.
Apparently not, because this is I mean, there's an overreaction. And then there's this level of overreaction.
Yeah.
This was incredible. He tweeted, he quote retweeted the video by saying, "Go suck a blood money covered dick in Saudi Arabia, you forking dork." Like, using the actual words. I mean, I'm
good placed it.
Yeah, I've good placed that. So, like, that is CM Punk saying to Miz, calling him a forking dork, bringing up Saudi Arabia blood money.
I mean, there are so many levels. Like, okay, the blood money thing, that's big.
That's big.
A blood money covered dick. that's graphic.
Yeah, and, you know, calling him, you're just a corporate shill.
Forking dork. He's mentioned Saudi Arabia. To my knowledge, or my recollection, Punk hasn't actually brought up the Saudi Arabia thing yet.
I mean, he's the first person who works for WWE backstage to do so.
Yeah, so it's just like, this is so many red flags. There's an argument that there's a bit of homophobia there as well.
Well, that comes into question.
I don't think there is. I think go suck a dick is a general way to go F off.
Yeah.
But you can't, like, you know, one section of the internet could easily interpret that.
100%.
Yeah.
And actually, Meltzer's written in The Observer about this. Later, Punk realised that it wasn't to be viewed well and deleted it. And Fox deleted their version of they deleted the video as well.
Fox were in the right.
No, I know. Meltzer continues, "Luckily for him, he's not a guy on the Jim Cornette list when it comes to enemies. While people were critical, it didn't result in a reaction by Fox or WWE over the idea that someone on their show made a homophobic remark and then forced them to make an apology. Really, it wasn't that big of a reaction, but there was a reaction."
Yeah, so that implies people backstage, on WWE backstage and in backstage in WWE, that's confusing, actually saw that tweet, understandably, I think, and were like, that's bang out of line.
Yeah, can you please delete this tweet now?
Yeah, I mean,
let's all delete this and never cover it ever again.
This would be a fantastic tweet if Punk wasn't a featured contributor on that show.
Absolutely.
So it really, like, and what Meltzer's alluding to there, or sort of speculating on, is when Jim Cornette made that racist comment that on commentary that worked its way into the final edit of an NWA Power.
Yeah.
That's not live. We still don't know how people signed off on that. But Cornette has so many people who are just waiting for him to trip up. It was almost that wave
of dissent. They didn't have to wait long, really.
Yeah, that got Jim Cornette removed. Whereas Punk doesn't have that section of people wanting to do the same to him. But, you know, that comment could have easily made that happen if the Twitter tide turned against him.
And the reason when we come back to this title, and this is a title that I came up with, so if you want to be annoyed with someone, you can be annoyed at me. That is not the tweet of someone who is happy in their position. Like, that is not someone who is just like, I have made the right choice here and I'm very happy with my career decision that I have made.
Yeah, it's like, first off, that's the wording is not a smart thing to tweet out at any time, really, if you're sort of affiliated with the company. And just,
even though you're signed with Fox, you are still affiliated with.
Yeah. Like, doing the tweet in the first place, so it implies to me, at least, that that's not someone who's in complete control. That was a fury tweet. Because, really, that video wasn't enough to prompt this kind of reaction. So it's kind of touched a nerve of something a lot deeper. And he knows he's in the wrong. When does Punk delete comments that he's made?
Yeah.
He says he's the voice of the voiceless. He's just censored himself.
I think someone texts him to say, can you please remove that?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because on the flip side of this, you've got all these, we've mentioned the rumours and speculation that Punk will one day actually make an in-ring return. He's currently the third favourite person to win the Rumble.
I think he's actually the second favourite now.
Right, okay. So that's betting odds, so take it with a big pinch of salt. But the signs are there. Brock Lesnar's number one in the Rumble. Mm-hmm. Paul Heyman is Lesnar's manager. Punk is a Paul Heyman guy.
Yeah.
I think all the things are there to bring Punk in. But, yeah, not if he keeps talking like this. But yeah, let us know what you think what's going on with Punk and WWE in the comments down below. And I expect a lot of AEW, CM Punk to AEW confirmed. And we'll be replying to those, as many comments as we possibly can when this video goes live. Speaking of AEW, What we got over there? Some ratings news.
Of course there is ratings news. So it's Thursday. Well, you know, it's the day after Thursday. Some people call that Friday.
Can we have like a ratings news thing? Because on when we cover this on the WrestleTalk news, you can see a slight drop. We never get like noticeable drops. It's just like a line when people tune in of
brag.
How many people stay with the video. But when we start talking about ratings, it will dip. And then when we stop talking about ratings, they'll come back again. So it's not like they go, this is boring, I'm not watching the rest of the video. They'll just skip.
Yeah.
Which is good that they're sticking around. But I find the ratings really interesting.
Why do fans care about ratings, Ollie? Yeah. Because there are, and it is a thing, there are certain fans that are really interested in TV ratings because that usually dictates where a company is going to go. They see what is working and push that thing.
Mm.
And there are the other subset of fans that are just like, well, that doesn't affect me in any way. I just want to enjoy the show. Usually I find that when it comes down to brand loyalty, so like when AEW is on top in the ratings, AEW fans be like, rating is the most important thing in the world. But then when NXT is winning, they're like, ah, ratings don't matter anyway.
Yeah. It's a marathon. Yeah. to illustrate how important ratings are, if you go back and watch the very, very good, if slightly North Korea PR'd series of the Monday Night Wars on the WWE Network, the story is told in a battle of the ratings every week. Yeah. Every couple of minutes, it has this slider scale of where WCW is against WWE Raw on the ratings scale.
Yeah, so these companies do care about the ratings. And, yeah, like I said, like if something is drawing well in a quarter hour, TV, you know, the companies are likely to go, okay, that worked. The fans are really into that. The TV audience is really into that. Let's do more of this on TV. Oh, okay, that really lost a lot of ratings. Let's do less of that, and we'll do more of this stuff. It really does dictate how a show then is plotted out.
So I think there's two things here. The argument that when people say, oh, but ratings don't matter, that's quite obviously wrong. They very much do matter. So that's a futile argument. However, if someone was to say, oh, but I don't care about ratings...
Yeah.
I totally understand that because at the end of the day, it's a lot of long numbers. 3.23 million.
Yeah.
You know? I often drop the final number. I just do two numbers. 2.2 million.
Do you want a fascinating thing about the ratings for AEW, though?
Yeah.
Do you know what gained viewers?
Oh, what was on this week? The Orange Cassidy.
Nightmare Collective.
No.
Yep. The third quarter saw AEW gain 17,000 viewers for a Riho versus Chris Statlander and all the post-match stuff with the Nightmare Collective. NXT lost 48,000 viewers for the Forgotten Sons versus Imperium.
Maybe that's because the Forgotten Sons Imperium thing wasn't a draw and Riho Statlander
was... That was a dusty classic, though.
Mm, but Riho Statlander was at least built up.
That's true.
So people were tuning in for that. And now they won't tune in for it next week.
And that is because the next quarter, the fourth quarter, saw AEW lose 48,000 viewers for Daniels versus Guevara and all the post-match stuff with Dark Order, while NXT also lost views for Austin Theory versus Joaquin Wilde.
So everyone turned up.
Anyway, but anyways, overall, AEW got 947,000 viewers. Last week was 967,000 viewers. So they actually grew from last week, which last week was an excellent show.
Oh, no,
well.
They dropped from last week.
Oh, sorry, I read the number wrong. Sorry,
yeah, 920,000 viewers.
By about 20,000 viewers. Sorry, that's my bad. So actually, last week's excellent show lost viewers.
But it's pretty much the same. But it's a great start to 2020. When they were closing out 2019, they were down into the 700s, 800s.
That's it, because AEW has gone from being over a million, down, particularly during the Survivor Series thing, and is growing their audience back up again. So this is actually, you know, really positive signs for AEW. NXT, on the other hand, got their second lowest viewership with 721,000, which is, when the ratings first came out, Brian Alvarez tweeted out, like, AEW got this. We don't have the numbers for NXT yet because it didn't break the top 50, which is, you know, not a great sign. And it really shows that when NXT was on its ascent, was all from main roster Survivor Series stuff. And that audience that they got there has not kept watching week on week. And they've actually just lost all of that audience that they got from Survivor Series.
Definitely the Survivor Series effect. It was, you know, the numbers completely changed from that go-home episode. And that's when NXT started picking up wins. I also think there's an argument that NXT have hotshot. So they put on, after Survivor Series, 6 weeks of takeovers.
Yeah, pretty much.
And that, you know, there's only... That's great for short-term gains, but you will set an expectation that you can't maintain, and then you will exhaust all these dream matches you can do.
But I think AEW are doing almost the same thing. I think they are getting to a point now where it's like, we're doing all of these first-time dream matches. that's not sustainable. Mm-hmm. Like Simon, housemate Simon said in the office yesterday when he was sitting down to watch NXT, he was like, do you know what? I'm a bit burnt out on NXT at the moment because I've seen all of these people now have all these dream matches. And I'm almost ready to just, I don't know what I need from this show anymore.
Yeah.
Because it was just like, we're in a war now. Let's put out everything that we can do. Let's put out these first time matches, these dream matches. It's not a sustainable lineup.
I'll be interested to see if AEW's upward trajectory can be linked with the pushing of the Elite as an actual top babyface force. Like we always said from the beginning. More interestingly is those all-important demographics.
Yeah.
The ratings are rated like calories are calories. Some calories are better than other calories. You know, calories from a lovely organic grass-fed steak are going to be better than the ones from a McDonald's burger, right? It's the same with ratings. So the 18 to 49-year-old demographic, so those that viewership, AEW almost doubled NXT's slice in that bit because NXT's viewership skews a lot older.
And that's, you know, that's going back to week one of the Wednesday Night War where AEW was doubling NXT in this demographic. Now, before people say, like, that, what's so important about that demographic? That's the advertiser's demographic. That's the one that they care about. So that's obviously the one that TV networks are going to care about because the advertisers pay the way.
Yeah.
Advertisers pay all this money because you are saying to them, hey, look, we're getting this many people in this demographic. So advertisers be like, cool, here's 500 million so you can advertise my product because we're also targeting that same demographic.
But what's most important?
Just sorry, the last thing. And DVR, when people always bring up like, oh, but DVR numbers, people are recording things. Advertisers don't like DVRs because you fast forward through that. So what they're looking for is they're looking for that live demographic. That's the one that matters to them, not the DVR demographic.
So what's the most important, however, for us as wrestling fans and the wrestling business as a whole, and more specifically, the style of wrestling that we all love, which is that style put on by NXT and AEW.
Absolutely.
A more mature, in-ring wrestling focused style with logical storylines and
wacky
cool
weddings.
Characters. But yep, the Nightmare Collective. 1.6 7 million people in total were watching that style of wrestling on Wednesday night.
That's a great,
that's good.
Great figure.
Yeah.
Love to hear that. Tony Khan tweeted, thanks to all who made last night's AEW one-year anniversary episode of Dynamite a rating success. For all of us to keep succeeding, AEW will listen to our fans. I hear your feedback and won't ignore what you want to see from AEW every week. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. Well, listen up, Tony. I know you're watching. Less Nightmare Collective. It's terrible.
Yeah, and if you could up our money.
Oh, yes.
But
sorry.
For what we're talking, you know. Oh, that's right. The thing.
Sorry. In which case, we'll edit point. The Nightmare Collective is great.
Yeah.
And everyone should really back off on hating them.
Can't wait for that car. It's how they pay their talent now, isn't it? Just cars. Everyone gets a car. You get a car. You get a car. So now we're going to do a new style segment. If anyone's got any sort of newsy in review week segments they want to see from us, you know, like what was the best match of the week, or who do you think had the best tweet and stuff, let us know in the comments, because we're just trying out a few new bits. Here's one bit that we're going to try out, which is stories we haven't necessarily got to speak about, because most of our live shows or these styles of shows are reviewing Raw, SmackDown, NXT. Me and Luke don't actually get to talk to you guys about the news that much.
And in great detail.
Yeah, and there's some stories that don't really get covered in the WrestleTalk news because there's not enough time for them. But that doesn't mean they're not really, really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to try and pick a story each from this week that doesn't necessarily, like, isn't a headline, but is actually quite cool.
And the one that I've picked out is the Gedo's original plans pre-AEW. So the AEW New Japan split has been, you know, well documented. It was a year of turmoil between the two of them. We thought something might have been patched up around Wrestle Kingdom 14 with the Jericho Tanahashi match and Moxley wrestling there. But it appears, though, the Forbidden Portal is still closed.
Is it a portal or a door?
Well, I think Tanahashi's original thingy, his original comment was Forbidden Portal, and then Jericho changed it to Forbidden Door.
It could have been a bad Google Translate.
It could have been a bad Google Translate.
Or a bad Chris Charlton. That's how most Japanese promos come into the English-speaking world, via Chris Charlton.
The Forbidden What's It
yeah.
is still closed. But there are talks about how, you know, they're building bridges. It's not as frosty as it once was. Wrestle Kingdom were mentioning AEW a lot during Wrestle Kingdom 14, during the Jericho-Tanahashi match, which previously had been a no-no word. Those three letters were banned backstage from being talked about. So things appear to be okay. But it was interesting that the Gedo's original plans for Kenny Omega before he went over to AEW, to start AEW, I thought were really interesting.
Because Gedo books a long time in advance.
Yeah.
He had these plans in place at the end of 2018 for the start of 2020.
So originally, Omega was to retain the IWGP Heavyweight Championship against Tanahashi at the Tokyo Dome and then lead to a match with Okada, their first meeting in the US for the Madison Square Garden show.
That was obviously what the plan always was. That huge Madison Square Garden joint show with Ring of Honor. That's what everyone bought the tickets for.
Completely,
that's
yeah.
why that show sold out 10,000 tickets at Madison Square Garden, the first non-WWE show there ever.
Sorry, Ollie, you're mistaken. They all bought tickets for Mega Ran.
Oh, yes, of course. Home run.
While we're under the impression Omega was to lose that match, he was not. The Tokyo Dome Final Four booking plan, with both the IWGP and IC belts at stake, was to be Omega versus Ibushi and Okada versus Naito, meaning one of those two would have been IC champion on the first night. So this is Wrestle Kingdom 14. It would have been Omega and Ibushi for the heavyweight title and Okada versus Naito for the IC title.
So what we actually got was Okada versus Ibushi for the heavyweight title, Naito versus Jay White for the Intercontinental.
Correct. The idea would be that Naito would have beaten both Okada and then Omega, since that was the plan for Naito to be the first person with two belts at the same time. So the finale of this, with Naito two belts, remained in place, but it was supposed to be against Omega. Like, Omega was, you know, going to have this big long run with the title. More than a year long run with it. From Wrestle Kingdom to the following Wrestle Kingdom.
Main eventing Madison Square Garden
yeah.
for New Japan for the title. Like, it's just such a shame things went down the way they did. And, you know, there wasn't really much going on for Omega between January and September. You had four AEW pay-per-views, the first one being in May.
Mm.
So, like, and that New Japan show in Madison Square Garden was early April.
Yeah.
So it's such a shame that we couldn't have at least had that match, and maybe Okada could have won the belt from him then.
Yeah.
But then you're having Omega lose in his home, not home country, but home continent.
North America.
Yeah.
But before we move on to your story of the week, I just wanted to read this from The Observer that came out this morning here in the UK. If New Japan talent was pushed on AEW television, you could argue that AEW, as number two company in America, would be giving a boost to the number three in the US market. But there is a question how NJPW can draw regularly with smaller shows and no television in the US. The recent San Jose show was a great sign, outdrawing NXT and having a far greater atmosphere and a much stronger show in a major NXT market.
Yeah, I get that, but New Japan are running those figures are skewed. NXT are running so many house shows, you know, three a week, I think, whereas New Japan put on four shows a year in the States.
Which is the point I was going to bring up, is that, yeah, you could make that argument that if they get into bed with AEW, will that help? You know, they've started New Japan of America. Mm-hmm. You know? So they've got plans to start, you know, more stuff over there with the Lad Dojo, as we were.
Lad Dojo.
Lad Dojo.
Hey,
Lad Dojo.
Wrestling Crabs!
But is that going to continue if you become a regular thing and not just a special attraction show that's only there twice a year?
Yeah, totally. I mean, you see that there's a name for it. It's called Killing the Town. Mm. If you run a town too regularly, there is a finite demand for wrestling shows, unlike, you know, football or other sports, real sports, where people are happy to go 2-3 times a week.
Well, why don't you take us through your new story of the week?
Mine is about the hottest feud in wrestling, which is the long-term booking of WWE versus Dave Meltzer. And as the hallmark of a great long-term storyline, WWE are using different people to elongate this feud.
Different plates spinning.
We've had Seth Rollins. He's the big one, I think. He's the end boss. Well, Vince McMahon's the end boss. When Vince McMahon tweets Dave Meltzer, that's going to be a cool day. That we had a bit of Charlie Caruso in there.
We
that's
did.
Kind of akin to a backstage segment to for tune in next week.
Yeah.
But she's not featured ever again. And now we've got WWE Backstage's own Ryan Satin.
Yeah.
So,
a man who the start of his journalism career in covering wrestling was taking shots at Dave Meltzer for being an old hack who has passed his prime.
Now, we must point out, so Ryan Satin is the on-screen reporter guy for WWE Backstage. It's a shill role. He actually did have a very good track record on Pro Wrestling Sheet. Still does. And yeah, his coverage has proven to be true way more often than not. He's one of the most reliable wrestling news sources out there.
He got the Goldust story.
Exactly.
And when Goldust was denying it as well, he had that Goldust had asked for his release and was going to be granted it.
Mm. But now he has sort of gone to WWE Backstage. There is an element of selling out there, weirdly. But Dave Meltzer was asked by a fan, do you think they'll cover? What story was it? The Miz...
Miz CM Punk stuff. And someone said to him, it's like, yeah, Ryan Satin's whole deal is just like, I don't want to be like seen as a shill. I'm a real journalist. Mm. But he won't cover that stuff because it reflects poorly on A, WWE, and B, the show that he now works for. And so like he didn't touch the Punk Miz story.
So Dave Meltzer, he's on his Twitter. He's got his phone and he does this. He dabs in reply. He quote replies that person and says, it doesn't bother me in the slightest that Ryan Satin and WWE Backstage won't cover that. I get the deal. I don't want or care about validation from people I cover. Those who want or care can't be real reporters anyway. Oh,
Dave.
So that, you know, you've got to assume that's talking about Ryan Satin.
Do you remember our old Dave?
You've been Daved, Ryan. So Ryan comes back, quotes that reply. Very professional, Dave. What a great example you set for other reporters by attacking your peers for no reason whatsoever.
And so Dave Meltzer saw that and was just like, you're not one of my peers.
Yeah. So Ryan Satin... started tweeting out paying respect to loads of his peers.
But no, he may as well have ended every single tweet with brackets, but not Dave Meltzer.
Yeah. So Dave also replied in this weird war of words. I have a rule about attacking peers. Ask Wade Keller and Bruce Mitchell.
Who Dave does consider his peers.
Yeah, so he doesn't, you know, say stuff about them. Ryan Satin says, you may not consider me one of your peers, but I can assure you I am Dave. Which is weird because then he doesn't, if he is a peer, he then doesn't talk about him being a peer.
Yeah.
And talking badly about me unprompted while bragging about being a real reporter makes you look petty. It's no different than what Brad Shepherd does. Think about that.
No, Ryan, it's no different to what you built your entire career upon. Like, him and Batty took the exact same approach, which was, rather than reporting news, it was like, we're reporting news, Dave Meltzer is wrong.
Yeah, so let's just read what that line again. Bragging about being a real reporter makes you look petty. I'll tell you what doesn't make you look petty is then tagging loads of other people who he does consider peers without Dave Meltzer. So he then went on to... give shout outs to, let's open this up. He's got a thread of people. Yeah. If you see Casey, who is the Squared Circle Sirens guy, really good reporting source on all things women wrestling.
It should be noted, actually, he has tweeted some excellent people in all of this.
Sean Ross Sapp, Fightful, one of the best guys out there.
He is a guy who has taken Fightful to another level.
I didn't know he was so tall.
Oh, and so handsome as
well. He is a handsome man. John Pollock. And, I don't know the name of the other guy, but post-wrestling.
Post-wrestling and doing some great stuff, yeah.
But, it's just Alex from TalkSport.
Who's great.
Ariel Hawani does MMA stuff. Emily of Pratt, I don't really know her, but apparently she does lots of indie stuff. SoCal Uncensored. Not the tag team. Other sites I respect, WrestleZone.com, Wrestling Inc., Pro Wrestling Net, Mike Killiam. Mike Killiam's a great wrestling writer. He's really good. A load of other names. Cultaholic got in there. And he said, more I'm probably leaving out by accident. Keep killing it, everyone. I'm thankful of the work you provide. And he's like, I knew I was going to leave some people out. The entire WWE on Fox crew.
Yeah. The people that pay my wages.
So, you know, we weren't on there. Going in Raw weren't on there. What culture wrestling? But you know, that's fine. It's not about us. This is just an attack on Dave Meltzer without overtly saying you suck, Dave.
It was quite funny, really.
So if it'll be really fun if... I mean, what can we ask everyone to do? I was thinking, I was trying to work out a bit in the news where I'd do the sort of Christian, my peeps, but it'd be my peers. Where are my peers at? But I can't. There's something there we can have fun with.
Well, do you know what? I'm going to throw this out to the comments because from what we have seen, you know, from the 3-4 years that we've been doing this now, we've got a very funny comment section. Oh, and yeah. Some people come up with so many things that we completely miss, like really like succinct puns that we should have seen. So let us know.
Yeah.
What have we missed?
You've got that. So TV match of the week. We are going for Rey Mysterio versus Andrade from Raw.
Yes.
A WWE main roster match, which was genuinely pay-per-view caliber, had a few botches in, but it was so good. I enjoyed it so much. Yeah. Don't care.
With the exception of the finish, it was my favourite TV match of the week. So I thought the finish was a bit clunky. It was a bit McClunky.
Yeah.
But I thought the match itself was absolutely fantastic. Really, really good. There's a lot of, you know, I thought the Omega and Hangman Page versus Private Party match was really good. The Fatal 4-Way main event of NXT was fantastic because Keith Lee's just boss level great. But I think it's Andrade and Rey as my TV match of the week. TV match of the week.
Maybe we'll get some jingles and everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you want to see any other segmenty bits, I feel like this is the show where we just go, no, you do the work. You do the work for us. Come up with ideas for us. Before we get into the Patreon mailbag, I'm going to be a pro wrestling... They're not called pro wrestling.
Stop saying that.
Eve. Riot Girls. Of
Someone
wrestling.
Told you off for that in the comments yesterday.
What?
Said, like, you badmouth Randy Andy Datsun for rolling his R's.
That's not
but
a...
When, that's what I said. I was like, he didn't roll his R's. He purred.
Purr's different. When Roy Orbison sings... Pretty Woman, walking down the street, you know, dun 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 dun. Mercy. One of the bits he does in that bit is, it's not a rolling of the R. I can't roll my R's. Can you?
Well, rolling of the R's.
I can't do that.
Can you not?
No, it's a different part of the mouth. That can't. This is all coming from here.
See, and I can't do that. It's very, very impressive. Can you roll your tongue? Good audio content.
On that, Eve is tomorrow. It's sold out. You can't come and meet us. Maybe you can for the next show. There, it's in London. But what you can do is watch it on Fight TV. It starts around 2 p.m. US time or something. Just type Eve into Fight TV and it'll tell you all the times and it'll be in your area.
It's their third annual Wrestle Queendom.
Love their women punnage.
Oh yeah, because they later in the year they have the She Won.
That's inspired.
Yeah.
That's inspired.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. and UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit UH1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Right, let's get in some Patreon mailbag stuff.
Indeed. If you want to submit a question to the Patreon mailbag, all you've got to do is become one of our awesome pledge hammers on Patreon at any dollar amount and leave a comment in the community tab. Do not email me. I will just lose it. However, I'm just about to contradict myself because someone did email me and I have remembered it. So I'm going to get it now. And the reason I have remembered it is because it's from Marcel Jura, who has sent us care packages in the past. It's a name that when I see, such a nice guy. But Marcel has completely ignored my instructions of leaving it in the community tab. And he emailed me directly. But he says, "Hi, Luke and the rest of the boys. It's been nearly a year that the formation of AEW was announced, and looking back at my expectation and what has materialized now, I'm a bit disappointed. Don't get me wrong, I really enjoy AEW and follow every episode, but I must say that it feels not as big as I thought it would be. I imagine that a new company with that kind of financial backing and good TV deal would simply feel bigger, more important, but somehow it doesn't. AEW lacks, in my opinion, the epic storylines, and somehow I feel like I wish there was more real star power. Cody is awesome and I love him, but as great a babyface as he is, he can't carry the company alone together with Mox and Jericho. So my question is, do you know what I mean and do you feel the same? Should AEW be bigger than it is right now? Love you all and I'm still happy you enjoy the Waldmeister, which clearly does not taste like apple." And
it's so apple-y.
It's so apple-y.
It's the most apple-y. It tastes more apple-y than apples. I totally agree with you. Totally agree with you, Marcel. But we spoke about this on the AEW show yesterday, actually, that before AEW became a thing, a tangible thing that we all knew what the actual tone was, which I would argue is the TV era, everyone could have their own expectations and wishes for it. And unless it's absolutely incredible to either meet those expectations or exceed it, it's going to fall short. And that's what's happened here, especially with everyone saying, "Oh, it's going to be really sports-based." I was thinking New Japan. I was thinking a US version of New Japan with some epic, proper, big storylines arching over it. But we haven't. We've got more PWG-style stuff, I would argue, with some lip service win-loss records, which haven't been as effectively utilized as I would have liked. And the grand overarching storylines, not a single one has connected apart from Cody MJF, which is part of a larger thing, I would argue.
I was expecting, you know, they were like doing all the Road to AEW stuff, like those amazing interview packages that they were doing.
Yes!
I was expecting more of that on TV, and I was excited. I remember, I think I even put out on Twitter saying, like, all Dynamite needs to be is this and an excellent wrestling product. And I'll be like, so, but they've not done any of that, which I think is a real shame, because I think those Road to AEW stuff gave, or like the Road to, whatever they called it, gave such a good, here is this character, here's why you should care, here's why you should be excited. I don't think they get that across on TV. I think that for all the good stuff they've done with some of their guys like Darby Allin and Pac and Jungle Boy and a few others, they could be way more over than they currently are if they can. And what's infuriating about it is it's right there.
Yeah.
You were already doing it. You just need to do it more. But I think they are in this, there's a worry. As soon as NXT went live, and as soon as NXT went head-to-head, video packages make people turn over. Interviews make people turn over. So you can see in those early weeks, they were just doing match, because when wrestling's on, people don't change. But as soon as you start doing talking, people, unless it's Jericho, people start turning over. So I think there was a worry that they were going to lose viewers by doing these sorts of video packages. But I think that TNT, by all reports, wanted a minimum of 500,000 viewers. And they have way exceeded that. They've doubled it in some aspects. So you don't have to worry so much now. Mm. I think that they could start doing more of that stuff. I was also expecting more Jimmy Havoc. So, you know, really, what a failure.
Your question, should it be bigger and better? I think it's really, its number and viewership is really impressive. So in terms of bigger, no, I think they've got that really well. I'm impressed by the growth. In terms of better, totally. Yeah, I agree. It's interesting. I never thought about that. What was AEW's plan for AEW before NXT went live?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's expectations they set. They were like, here's all our building packages towards TV and pay-per-views. This is how it will look. And then we only had the first promo with Cody for that opening
with Sammy Guevara
match on the first episode. And it was fantastic.
Yeah, I want more of that. Yeah. Michael says, greetings, gentlemen. New Pledge Hammer here. My question is, with the upcoming Dusty Rhodes Classic coming up and Matt Riddle teaming with Pete Dunne instead of an already established partner in Keith Lee, do you feel it's a sign that there may be bigger plans in place for Keith Lee heading into WrestleMania season?
Oh, I hope so. I mean, because I'll get in the trap of, I want this to happen. Everything will suck if it doesn't, because I want that to happen so bad. I want Keith Lee to win the Rumble, eliminate Brock, and beat him at WrestleMania for the title.
I think that, like, Mike obviously left this before he was, you know, won the Fatal 4-Way and he's going to face Roddy for the North American Championship. I think that was their plan for him. They want to push him into that North American Championship picture and then into that NXT Championship picture. And keeping him out of the Dusty Rhodes Classic is a way to do that. It also, you can do something with Riddle and Dunne where, like, as a random thrown together team, you can split them up and have them feud into a match. Because I'd love to see a Riddle-Dunne match. It'd be great.
Plus, the promo where Matt described how he got Dunne as his tag partner is flawless.
Yeah.
So I'm glad it exists. The bros awaits.
Yeah, that's bros awaits. Shane Cowley says, guys, you've been putting out so much great content, I decided to up my sub tier.
Oh,
no, I will not hear it. Take my money.
Okay.
By far the most consistent content on the internet. WrestleTalk will always be the best.
That's what we're aiming for. Thank you very much for the kind words. And our 2020 resolution is to be more consistent than ever, because I feel we got a bit inconsistent in panic mode last year.
Bar Barking Mad says, should Rousey return and face Becky at the Rumble or Mania? Fantasy booking-wise, does Ronda win the belt back? So, like, does Ronda return at the Rumble, win the Rumble, and then face Lynch at Mania?
I suppose that would be the best overall story.
I feel like there's a lot of money in that.
Yeah, because
the one-on-one rematch.
Exactly. And it's such a nice mirror image of Becky winning the Rumble, winning at Mania, Ronda winning the Rumble, then winning at Mania. It's like, anything you can do, I can do better. Plus, Ronda... Oh, no, Becky did pin Ronda. So Charlotte Flair was sort of protected in that, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would like to see...
Did she pin Ronda?
Yeah. I'd like to see a whole year. If she does win the belt, she's got to be around for another year.
Flaming Clive says, with the brand split in full effect, would you like to see the original brand exclusive pay-per-views where Raw and SmackDown had their own pay-per-views where they split every other month and share the major four? For me, no, because I don't think the roster depth is enough on either brand to facilitate it. I know, like, some people get left off, but I actually think that's a positive because no one gets oversaturated. But, like, you go back to those original brand split pay-per-views and it's like, it's Baron Corbin versus Sami Zayn on pay-per-view when they were having those matches on SmackDown as well. And the pay-per-views felt like just another episode of the show and they just dragged.
Yeah, I used to joke it was Sunday Night Raw.
Yeah.
And they come too thick and fast because WWE never perfected an 8-week build to a pay-per-view. So they would become... You get a pay-per-view every 3 weeks, and it was exhausting. And they best of both worlds. They got out of it pretty quickly.
Flaming Live also says, as a side note, move Money in the Bank back to WrestleMania. Which I agree with.
Yeah, I like it as an attraction, yeah. It doesn't need to be its own thing.
And it's better with just one briefcase as opposed to four.
Yeah, maybe...
There's two, isn't there?
Maybe either the women's Money in the... Like, they alternate. So one year... The men's Money in the Bank briefcases at Mania, and the women's one headlines its own pay-per-view show.
Yes, yeah, I like
and then
that.
The next year, you flip the genders around.
Kevin Fluriot says, hey guys, my question is, what do you think will happen to The Fiend this year, pre-Mania, post-Mania? I know a lot of people speculate that Roman will take the belt at Mania and his mask according to Luke, but I'm wondering how he could bounce back if he lost the title, or even if he doesn't, who will he feud with?
Yeah, unfortunately, I feel like the shine really is off The Fiend. Like, considering how he was the most over thing in wrestling, and they botched it. And he's never got back to those heights.
Hell in a Cell was...
It was
a
that
real
bad.
Disastrous moment, yeah.
I think he should... If Brock wins the Rumble, which is problematic in its own way, The Fiend should beat him. And that's a real, that would be a good way to, and like squash him as well.
Mm.
That'd be a really good way to reassert him. I think the Fiend beating The Undertaker is something that needs to happen. I think the Fiend beating John Cena is also something that needs to happen.
Yeah, I would say that if the Fiend does lose the title at Mania, which I'm kind of, that's where I'm, my mind is going at the moment, I'd like to see him do those sort of attraction matches against people like Taker and Cena. Daniel McKee says, got last minute second row seats for SmackDown.
Ooh.
At the very last minute. I really enjoyed myself, but a few things bothered me. They don't let you stand up during the match if you're that close. Nobody looked like they wanted to be there. Commentary, camera crew, security, everyone. And they didn't even give us Fiend versus Daniel Bryan dark match that was advertised. My question is, do you think that WWE is now strictly a television product while AEW is focused on the crowd and live experience?
My friend, it's been that way for 15 years, unfortunately. I hate going to WWE TV tapings.
We haven't been for years.
House shows, however, so much fun.
Mwah, wonderful stuff. Yeah. Love a house show. But TV product is, going there live is a slog.
Yeah,
yeah, it really is. Frank Botello says, hey guys, if you started WrestleTalk Pro Wrestling, who would be in charge of creative, producer, talent relation, commentary, general manager, and ring announcer? Don't expect this to happen. Just thought I'd ask a fun question. Love you guys.
We'd get in professionals. Honestly, we're getting a proper TV producer who knows wrestling and has worked in wrestling. I'm assuming we've got a big Tony Khan-style budget. We'd get in some great creative minds. We'd try and ask Dave Meltzer to be on some kind of board. We'd get Gado, right? You know, talent relation, I don't know. It's the commentary is an interesting one. General manager, ring announcer.
Well, I mean, commentary's easy. We just bring in Dave.
Yeah.
Dave Bradshaw.
Yeah, Dave Bradshaw.
Yeah.
Well deserving of a shot. And so Cal Val.
Yeah, those are a dynamic duo. That'd be a lot of fun.
Of course, Alex
Dave Shane. Bradshaw doing his commentary. And so Cal Val just providing lovely comments.
I mean, I hate to say this because I don't like three-man booths, but Alex Shane as a comedy heel is so funny.
Particularly with Bradshaw.
Yeah,
those two bounce off so well.
And then so Cal Val on the other side.
Just talking about butts.
Yeah, yeah.
Callum says, hey, what's up, WrestleTalk gang? My question is, what is your favorite TV show of all time? Both of you choose one.
Ooh.
And I'll come back to you in about a month's time telling you which one I prefer, even if I've already seen it. Also, tell me what streaming service I can watch it on in the UK. Ah, that knackers out my pick.
Mm.
Because my pick, my Twilight Zone is my favorite TV show of all time. The original 59-64 era of the Twilight Zone, that's my favorite TV show of all time. But that's not available on UK streaming services. You'd have to buy the Blu-rays.
I'm not even on an Amazon Prime.
You might be able to get it on Amazon Prime.
Like if you buy it, and then you might rent it.
Yeah, you'd have to buy it or rent it, yeah. But unfortunately, yeah, it's not available to stream for free. Well, pay for it.
This, you know, it's like, what's your favourite movie? I could give you 100 things. But of the last year, the thing I've most enjoyed is Veep. You know, all seven seasons are great, but those first four seasons when Iannucci was producing it and writing is... It's so tightly written, it's fantastic.
Veep sounds like that thing that Chris Statlander does when she bops people. Veep.
It also sounds like a hair removal strip.
If I'm going to pick something a bit more current, it's not that current, it's about 20 years old at this point. Freaks and Geeks is an absolutely fabulous show. It's only one season long.
And that's on 4OD.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's on 4OD right now, so you can watch that.
I kept hold of my DVD collection. When I sold all of my DVDs, I'm going to keep hold of my complete series.
I was the guy at uni who introduced everyone to Freaks and Geeks.
Right.
It was my DVD that did the rounds. Because that's where Seth Rogen started, James Franco, loads of Jay Roach, loads of people came from that. It was also Judd Apatow's first proper thing.
Paul Feig as well.
Paul Feig, yeah, of course.
He directed several episodes.
And people come up to me now and say, oh man, have you seen Freaks and Geeks? I was like, I lent you the DVD. Or like maybe I didn't lend them the DVD, but it did the rounds. It's like, no, that was my DVD you watched.
Yeah, I always think of that show. Whenever I hear Sunshine of Your Love, that always comes into my head. Plus, it's my love of Linda Cardellini. Anyway,
watch that. That's a good choice.
Lance C, not really a question. Just wanted to do an appreciation post for Randy Andy Datsun. Since joining the SmackDown Review, he's quickly become my favorite host to listen to. He's now the WrestleTalk MVP. I need a two-man booth of Andy and Laurie or Simon for an upcoming review.
I'm sure Laurie would love that. I am amazed at how much Andy has stepped up.
It's amazing. And I'm so proud of him.
Yeah, yeah. Because he, you know, he's not done on screen stuff at all. He did one with me for Women's Evolution pay-per-view when you and Laurie were off, and it was just us in this room with the boards. There was no set or anything. And then almost a year later, we're like, oh, we're no one's around for this Saturday on SmackDown. Can you fill in? And he was like, yeah. And he was so excited. And he did it. And he freaking knocked it out of the park.
Didn't he text you saying, like, I'll be on my best behavior?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, yeah, I'm really good. I mean, it's been so good that we've made him the permanent guy on SmackDown now.
He's been great. Yeah. Ree says, hello, my lovely lads. Have a lovely, consistent time, apart from Randy.
Something- I'm still doing that. He's rough.
Yeah. Something I've been thinking of since listening to your coverage of Wrestle Kingdom over the weekend in relation to the potential of a working relationship between NJPW and AEW. Now, granted, as a news channel, you may have a bias, but surely as fans, instead of some announcement saying the companies will be working together going forward, wouldn't it be more entertaining if they just did it? No press conference or press release, just wrestlers from New Japan showing up on Dynamite, maybe even doing an invasion storyline for a while. Maybe it's just fantasy booking on my part, but I'd be curious to hear how you'd want a working relationship to be revealed.
Totally, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't have minded end of the Jericho-Tanahashi match and Mox attacking him.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. But totally, an invasion thing. I hate it when WWE or AEW announce stuff like that in advance. The CM Punk, you know, ugh.
John Morrison. Like, that would have been a much more fun reveal if he'd just shown up on SmackDown or if he was just an entrant in the Rumble. Particularly then when you reveal it on backstage that he signed, and then a few weeks later when he does debut, you've got Corey Graves going like, whoa, we've heard rumblings.
Yeah.
Like, no, you literally announced he's coming back. A couple of questions from Ket. He says, Drew's 1-2-3 setup for the Claymore looks dumb to me. He might as well yell at his opponents that he's doing the Claymore. Other examples of wrestlers telegraph their moves, Shawn Michaels, Randy Orton. How do you feel about wrestlers telegraphing moves?
It's a really effective way to get the crowd
into it. That's exactly it. It's a crowd thing.
Especially the tuning up of the band, I think, is fantastic. I totally get the kayfabe argument against it, but it works.
And he also asked, what's your favourite Chris Jericho? Is it Y2J Jericho, Suit Jericho, Bright Light Jacket Jericho, Scarf and List Jericho, or Painmaker Le Champion Jericho?
I've got to be honest. The correct answer is the first heel Jericho against Shawn Michaels.
The Suit Jericho.
That's just, he revolutionized what it was to be a heel in that era. You know, that slow talking, quiet to the mic. But Raw was forking bad in 2015-16, and it was that Jericho Owens dynamic that got me through. So I'll go List Jericho.
I'm going Y2J.
Yeah.
Loved Y2J. Jobber JJ says, hello, Swaff Nation and WrestleTalk crew. Small story before my question. It's not that small a story. If you remember my super chat about this being the least interested I've been for the Royal Rumble, WrestleMania as a wrestling fan, here's why. I've been watching past Royal Rumbles for a couple of years, and for the most part, everyone just feels like a guy and nothing else. The wrestlers who feel like real stars are the McMahons, Brock Lesnar, Randy Orton, John Cena. Granted, some wrestlers do feel bigger now compared to a few years ago, like The New Day, The Usos, Bray Wyatt. WWE just sells tickets, and it's WWE, and people are just there to buy tickets because it's the Rumble. But when I look at Cody and Moxley especially and how I feel like real stars in AEW compared to where they were in WWE, it's just astonishing, and the wrestlers who are used to like in WWE, it just saddens me. Now to my question. Why do people buy tickets when we all know it's overpriced and it's not really worth going, and how long can WWE keep selling tickets because WWE is in town? Sorry for the long story. I hope you enjoy your day.
There will always be a contingent of people who will go to a WWE show because it says WWE on the thing. But that has a ceiling, as we've seen, because house show attendance and live event attendance to WWE is increasingly down year on year for ages. And AEW have come in and shown that if you build it around names and stars and personalities, that's much easier for a large amount of people to latch onto. Because what's more enticing? Do you come here to listen to me and Luke? Or do you come here to listen to WrestleTalk?
Yes,
that's the argument there.
Chris Thorne, if you could sign anyone to WrestleTalk, who would it be and who would it be and why would it be Simon Miller?
Here's why.
Seriously though, Glow Season 2 showed the girls swapping gimmicks for the night in an interesting episode showing how different the characters play them. If WWE did this, whose gimmick would you like to see changed? Andrade should come out as Eddie Guerrero's lie, cheat, and steal gimmick, Shorty G as the world's biggest athlete, The Big Show, and R-Truth as R-Truth. That's really good.
That's fantastic, Chris. I would love to see that. Not on main continuity, but on a sort of network special.
Yeah.
And that's the sort of stuff that the network should be doing.
Yeah, like Becky coming out as Charlotte.
Oh, yeah.
Charlotte coming out as Becky.
Or the Southpaw Regional Wrestling pay-per-view when that was a hot thing.
Actually, I'd like to see Charlotte come out as Bayley. Like,
yeah.
Like proper like babyface Bayley.
Oh, that's such a good idea.
Yeah, I think that'd be a lot of fun.
Who would you have... I reckon Kevin Owens could have some
fun.
Oh,
he'd be so good. It's Kevin Owens coming out as Sami Zayn.
Well, I was going to say Sami Zayn should come out as El Generico.
I mean, it has to be someone else's gimmick, so yeah, that does work.
Roman Reigns, who would you have him come out? Baron Corbin. You really want some, like, really opposite thing. Maybe everyone just does opposites day, and whoever they're in the feud with.
It's bizarro world.
Brock Lesnar comes out as AJ Styles. Can you imagine that? He wouldn't be up for it.
No.
Oh, that's such a fun idea, though. I love that.
Lee Spicer says, "Hi, guys. I've been recently thinking of the moment that made me fall in love with pro wrestling, that being the Hell in a Cell match between Cactus Jack and Triple H at No Way Out 2000 when Foley was thrown over Mr. NXT's shoulders and crashed through the cell in the ring. What's the moment that made you fall in love with pro wrestling forever?" And mine's actually quite connected to that. It's the reveal of Cactus Jack. It's the Mankind coming out being like, Mankind cannot face you at the Royal Rumble. But I think I know the guy takes it off. His name is Cactus Jack. Triple H is selling him. It's amazing. Cactus Jack is back. That's the moment that really made me fall in love.
Shows our combined age, because we're all going to say stuff from the same couple of months. Mine's Shane McMahon hitting the elbow drop off the Titantron onto Steve Black. No, it was Steve Blackman. No, it was Shane McMahon falling off the scaffolding
when
Steve Blackman hit him at SummerSlam 2000.
Mohammed, how's everyone doing today? Smiley emoji. Just a quick note, the Royal Rumble is in Keith Lee's home state. Can you see it happening?
Yes.
Him winning?
Yes, 100 times yes. Let's all set our expectations to that now.
It's in his home state. That means he's getting thrown out very quickly. Callum, can you see AEW going to 3 hours so they can get more people on TV each week?
No.
No.
No, they're too smart for that.
Yeah. Abnahav, I have to confess something. I love Black versus Murphy matches. I think these two can be the next Orton versus Cena or Rock versus Austin. That is a bold claim.
Yeah, that not Orton versus Cena. I hope not. What, have 2 years worth of boring matches?
Oh man, I was actually getting, because like our Patreon WrestleTalk Extra show is going to be Royal Rumble 2001. But Royal Rumble 2014 was in there, which had that Cena-Orton match, which the crowd completely turned on, because WWE pitched as like, this is an all-time classic match, and the crowd completely turned against it. And I was actually quite looking forward to revisit that. Anyway, Abnahav continues. What I mean is WWE can push them and make the whole company around these two guys. In my fantasy world, Black wins the Rumble, defeats Lesnar at Mania, and has a healthy run. At the same time, Murphy wins Money in the Bank and does his own thing. Come Survivor Series, we have Black versus Fiend. And then after Black loses, because it's the Fiend, Murphy cashes in and you continue the story. What do you guys think? Do you think WWE could build the company around these two?
I think Aleister Black has a chance. I love Buddy Murphy, and don't take this as a slight against him, but I don't see him as, some people, as great as they are, have a scene of an upper mid-carder. Like Cesaro's unfortunately one of them in my head, and Buddy Murphy is. But Aleister Black has something. He could genuinely transcend into a mainstream position.
Yeah, I'm not sure that those are the two guys to build the company around, as much as I like both of them. Tom Delves, hey, WrestleTalk lads, got a couple more here. Did you notice at the end of AEW, Mox was meant to grab another bottle, but it broke in his hand before he could do anything about it? Ollie and Luke mentioned liking that he didn't interact with Hager, but that might have been purely by accident. Was this an error or actually improved things? No, I think the Hager thing was 100% intentional, because they're protecting Big Hurt. But I didn't notice the other bottle breaking in his hand.
No, I didn't either. He's so strong.
And the bottle's so weak.
Yeah, it shows how gimmicked up those bottles were. You'd kill someone if you actually hit a champagne bottle over their head. Probably.
I wonder if they learned from the chair incident.
Yeah. The chair's just going to disintegrate when you pick them up, like when Buffy the Vampire Slayer vampires get staked.
It's dusted. And lastly, Lorenzo Haynes. Hey, guys. I never watched a New Japan pay-per-view until my friend invited me to watch Wrestle Kingdom 14 this weekend. I really like it and exposed me to some people I never knew of. I expressed that I didn't like the ending of day two because I'd only saw Kenta lose, but yet he took down the double champion and stood tall in the end. My friend told me that Kenta was really good as a heel and I should watch his heel turn. Long story short, I learned about his friend Shibata and I looked up Shibata headbutt on YouTube and nearly puked. My question is, when you guys were watching Shibata matches and saw him do that move, did you cringe as much as I did? Did he hit everyone that hard in every match? Are there any moves done now in wrestling that make you cringe? The Big ESP, Charlotte's moonsaults to the ring, moonsaults out of the ring. P.S. I'm glad Shibata seems to be okay after the injury. Love the channel. Laurie is hilarious. I remember that day.
Yeah, so
because we were working together when he did that headbutt, and that thud is gross and sickening.
It's one of those things where you look back in retrospect and go, oh yeah, you probably should never have been doing those. But we were all kind of ignorant. It's like when you go back, when I was a kid, watching all those chair shots to the head, I was like, yeah, another one, another one, another one. But now that makes me feel uncomfortable. When Shibata was doing all those headbutts before, you know, no one had suffered, what was it, sort of a bruising of the brain or contortions on the brain, whatever it was. Gross. So I love those spots. I just assumed they were relatively safe. I mean, apparently the problem there was that it was such a long match. He was dehydrated. That left his brain a bit more exposed. But, you know, that was a ticking time bomb with that sort of thing he was doing. He always laid it in thick. But the secret to safe wrestling of that style, or the safest you can be, is to hit hard in safe places. Fleshy bits like the front of the chest, the back, this bit of the neck. Don't do it to your fucking cranium.
No, I remember when that match happens. Well, sorry, not that match, but when they did the Shibata Ishii match at Wrestle Kingdom, I remember going around to my friends and being like, oh my God, dude, you got to see this match. It's absolutely insane. And he watched and he was like, I do not like that style of wrestling. He goes, because they are literally, I like wrestling because it's, they're safe in there. I don't want to see people legit just kick the hell out of each other. I may as well just watch UFC. And Brian Alvarez's review of, it was the Kenta
Goto
match, where he said, like, it would have been safer for them to just have a real fight rather than pretend to have a fight.
Yeah. Look, Shibata was one of my favorite wrestlers. Amazing. He's top five wrestlers when he was active. And we had the pleasure of seeing him live a few times in Rev Pro in London. Mm-hmm. And it's a real shame.
Yeah, real, real shame. But that is all of our questions.
Yeah, so thank you, everyone. Please go over to Patreon to become a pledge hammer. And then you, at any tier, and you can submit questions to this mailbag portion as well.
This email comes in from Chad, who says, I'm Chad, a dedicated listener, first-time emailer. Listened to the New Japan podcast and heard you offhand mentioned not liking Firefly, the TV show Firefly.
You, I love it.
Yeah.
That's a you thing.
That's a me thing. That's a me thing. I need to hear you elaborate on this. I think we might be the only two people who agree.
This is like the band's thing.
Yeah. While working on my master's degree, all of my compadres were obsessed with Fireflies. They would rave about it all the time. I didn't have time to watch it, so a few years later, I decided to watch it on my own. After the first few episodes, I was watching to hope it would get better. After the series, I was hoping the movie would do something the television show couldn't. I was disappointed. Briefly put, I think Firefly is evident of all Joss Whedon's worst characteristics. Cough, alien resurrection cough. It's beaten down by snarky dialogue, which could come from any character's mouth interchangeably. Oh, it's my least favourite thing about Whedon dialogue. Shallowness of plot, which is not hidden by story continuity, and the incessant sense that Joss Whedon thinks he is very clever and has confused that with drama. Okay, phew. Keep up the consistency and stuff. Oh, that's from
Chad.
I love that
line. Yeah. That's good.
I just think Firefly's a fine show. Like, it's so broadly okay that I was baffled when everyone was like, oh my God, it's this generation Star Wars. I was like, is it?
Yeah, it's not that good.
No, that, my housemate at university, because the film came out, Serenity, when we were in my third year of university, and he came back with me and I was like, I now know how my dad felt when he saw Star Wars for the first time. And I'm like, mate, it's so fine. Like, it's just okay.
So fine.
It's my wife's favorite movie of all time, Serenity.
Wow, that's problematic.
And I've watched it and I was like, yeah, it is a fine 3-star movie. And the TV show is a fine. It's about as good as the best seasons of Buffy, which themselves were broadly fine.
Ooh, you're going to get some... But, it's kind of within a genre of network TV around that time. I used to love... what was it called? Like Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman. Do you remember that?
And
just like the sort of network TV, Western, pretty slow. That's what Firefly was to me, but with spaceships... I loved Anne Christina Hendricks, who I was besotted with. When did Serenity come out?
2007?
Because I Google it, a different film comes up also called Serenity.
I'm going to guess 2007. I was definitely at university, and it was either my second or third
2005,
year.
Yeah. So I wasn't at uni yet.
Yeah, so it was my second year.
I remember seeing it, and I hadn't seen Firefly. I just saw Serenity. I didn't know Firefly was a thing. And that was my favorite film of the year. I loved it when I saw it.
Yeah. I think it's fine. It's perfectly okay. It's just not as great as a lot of people make it out to be.
People have different opinions.
Absolutely. Of course they do. Some people might watch The Twilight Zone. You heard about me talking there and be like, eh, it's broadly fine.
I finished The Irishman finally yesterday.
Took you 3 days.
After 3 days. It's a 3.5-hour long movie on Netflix.
Too long.
I did it in 2 1-hour chunks and then a big 90-minute finale, which is what a film should be, right? Yeah. So I watched 2 HBO episodes and a payoff movie then. And you know what? Now it's all done. It is too long, and there's a great 2-hour movie in there. But as a sort of thought experiment, it's pretty interesting. Yeah, I feel like a better person for having watched it. And the de-aging stuff is actually really good.
Mm. Yeah.
Really, really seamless.
I've not watched it because my wife will not watch a movie that is 3.5 hours long.
Mm.
So I would have to find time to watch it on my own. And I don't think I'm interested enough to watch it on my own.
Just watch it in chunks on your breaks.
Yeah,
it could be.
Download it on Netflix and just watch it on my commute.
I was
just how Scorsese intended.
Yeah, on at the smallest phone possible. I was apprehensive about splitting the movie up because I hate doing that. I like to watch movies as chunks. No, not as chunks, as one big complete whole.
One big chunk.
Yeah, one big chunk. And it's actually a very episodic narrative, kind of like Goodfellas. You know how it's just here are bits in a guy's life. So it's actually really fine to consume it that way.
Well, on the subject of TV, Matt Field emails in to say, "Hi, Luke, Ollie, and the WrestleTalk team. Don't know if any of you watch Doctor Who."
Not anymore. It's rubbish.
But since Chernobyl took over the writing, or Chinball, is that his name? Chibnall?
I don't know the name of the new showrunner.
Sorry, I completely said Chernobyl and I don't know why. Chibnall took over writing for the show, Series 11. The storytelling has been Vince McMahon-like. Story callbacks, limited story progression, and the acting, well, let's just say it's questionable.
Oh, it's awful. Yeah, I mean, I've tried. I watched the New Year's Day episode. And it was atrocious.
And I found this very interesting because the big criticism of Moffat before he left was just like, that guy has no idea of story progression and he just makes stuff up on the fly and it never makes any sense. But he thinks it's brilliant writing. So it was very, very, you know, interesting because I've not seen this criticism of the new storyteller since he came on board. The one thing I don't like Doctor Who because I think BBC dramas look really cheap and just feel like Saturday afternoon TV that has been somehow bumped up to prime time. But I do like Jodie Whittaker. I think she is so likable.
She's bad in it.
Is she?
Yeah.
I think she's wonderfully likable.
Well, should try watching Doctor Who then. She's bad in that.
Well, no, that's
everyone's
bad.
But I watched
the two episodes I have seen her do, she was the only thing I enjoyed.
She has.
And I love Bradley Walsh.
He's terrible. He's the worst.
He's very bad.
Oh, he's so bad in it. Jodie Whittaker has her mouth open for 90% of the time. It's just always a gape.
But again, I want to point out, bad acting is not like exclusive to this season of Doctor Who. That's like across the board it's always been like
Look,
that. And it's not exclusive.
Yes,
and it's,
you're right.
And it's like that on every BBC drama.
The Doctor, at least, was always pretty good. You know, Capaldi, Matt Smith, Christopher Eccleston. Come on, who's the one guy? David Tennant. Yeah. They're all, you know, at least their performances are captivating. I find Jodie's very obnoxious.
Anyway, Matt's email continues. I'm really not sold on Jodie Whittaker. Not because she's a woman. I just thought the creative went high over the rock.
That's the annoying thing. Like, I feel like every time I criticize it, I feel like, oh, yeah, because she's the first woman to take on the role. Like, she's bad.
You take the Andy Datson role.
I'm
just like, well, no, she's a woman, therefore she's bad. But like many WWE superstars, the writing she is given is just awful.
Yeah.
I've just finished watching the second part of the Spyfall episodes, and I have to say it was actually some creative storytelling. Hallelujah. Even though bringing back the Master for the 100th time isn't that creative, it's certainly an improvement and actually recalled events that happened in Series 11. I'm hoping the low ratings have woken the creators and Chinball up, just like the yearly ratings reset for WWE. What are your opinions on the show? Hope you actually watch the show. Otherwise, this is a pointless email. Thanks, boys. Matt Field.
I think it's a crap show. I think it's been crap for a long time. I think Moffat really lost his way as well through the Capaldi days. I was there, hook, line, and sinker, ready for Capaldi. It was just nothing there story-wise, no good villains. I love Matt Smith. Matt Smith, I thought, was the best version of merging Moffat and that was the best era of Doctor Who so far for me. But I hope it dies a death, honestly. And then, in 20 years' time, I can finally resurrect it with my two-series arc that I've had since I was 15.
Well, I have one last email that's coming in from Felipe. Now, this is an interesting email because this was sent to us as sort of like a news piece.
Mm.
That it was sent to me, Laurie, and Andy.
Cheers, man.
Yeah.
Where's me?
Because I thought, when I saw that it was sent to multiple people, that I said, like, oh, did you see Felipe's email about the fan council? And you were like, No, because he did not send it to you. Anyway.
The hell, Felipe.
Interesting, though, although he's also sent to Laurie Nandy, he just says, hey, Luke, just wanted to share something very interesting regarding WWE. They just created a fan-based council. A couple of days ago, I received an email headed as WWE Needs Your Help. It was an invitation for the opportunity to join an exclusive fan council. I took a long online survey with lots of potential, personal questions like ethnicity, annual incomes, occupation, and a lot of related wrestling stuff about my routine, background, how would you define yourself as a fan, when was the last time you watched programming, etc., etc. After finishing the survey, I received another email stating that I had been selected for the so-called council and will get a survey soon. I got a link for a website so this council with information and access these surveys. I already filled two surveys. First one basically asked me a question about how I feel about online surveys. Which I think is very funny. And the second one asked me to rate Raw, SmackDown, and NXT on storylines, match quality, and separate categories. I'm actually quite excited about this. Maybe they started caring for what the fans actually think, or maybe this has been done before and I've never heard about this. I'll be happy to continue sharing details with you guys of what kind of surveys they sent or any other news regarding the council. Cheers, mate. Hope you have a big one with the boys. And he sent some pictures of him on the council.
Oh, fascinating.
So this is nothing new. They've been doing this now for like 15, maybe even 20 years.
As long as they had newsletter surveys, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, probably as long as since they had like surveys you could send out to houses, like paper versions. But they've always done this and they've always got the feedback. And very rarely do they actually listen to it because they just get the feedback and be like, no, they're wrong. Mm-hmm. And we are right. We're going to continue what we do. It's actually interesting. You've seen the video that's been going around recently of Hulk Hogan wrestling in New Japan against Great Muta in the WWF champion versus IWGP champion. No. Hogan is working his ass off. He is doing internationals. He is doing enziguris. He is doing like submission takedowns and stuff. And everyone's watching this going like, wow, Hogan's a worker. And it's like, yeah, Hogan was a worker, but Vince had his match. Vince had the Hogan match and he made him do it every single time.
And Hogan, if he didn't have to put in the effort,
he wouldn't.
Why would he?
Exactly. Yeah. He could just do what? You mean I'd only have to take four bumps? That's great. That sounds amazing.
It's a smart idea.
Yeah. So I just thought we'd read out that email. So if you do have anything you want to share with us from the fan council, Felipe, please do.
I love it. It sounds like a faction. the
fan council.
The inner circle.
Yeah.
But when we get out, just to prepare Luke for tomorrow. Here it is. We'll only do the first verse. It's a long song.
But I don't know it that well.
You'll get the gist.
You'll have to guide me along.
Turn around. Look at what you see. In her face. The mirror of your tree.
You're meant to be guiding me,
man. Am I doing the chorus?
Make believe I'm everywhere. Given in the light.
That's it, yeah.
Written on the pages is the answer to a never-ending story.
Yeah, I don't know it as well as I thought. I know the chorus.
Did you succeed in this challenge?
Reach the stars.
Fly a fantasy. Dream a dream. And what you see will be. Rhymes that keep their secrets will unfold behind the clouds. And there upon a rainbow is the answer to a never-ending story. Story. Take care, I love you, goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter.
Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.